Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast. Hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa John. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 4 of the Real Docs Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Lisa Jung.
And I'm Dr. Britt Lesher.
Today, we are going to talk about something that's been, I feel like, a little more popular or people are kind of gearing a little towards, but going alcohol-free or even just backing down on alcohol consumption. So kind of everything in between of alcohol.
Yeah, I think alcohol is one of those things like probably smoking cigarettes, that it was a popular thing that a lot of people were doing because it was like accepted culturally. But then we learned about all of the negative impacts of smoking. And then, you know, we started to recommend against it. Providers started to recommend against it. And it's less common. I mean, I feel like vaping is more common now, but.
Or the Zyn.
Yeah, the nicotine packs or whatever. But I think that I've been seeing a trend too, just in patients and like their alcohol consumption. It's one extreme or another. It's like, I feel like people are like, I don't drink at all, or they're drinking way too much. So maybe we can kind of give some guidance on like what a healthy level of alcohol consumption would be. And then if you are looking to stop drinking and have a little sobriety journey, then you can try out some of these alternatives that we're going to talk about today. I'm blanking on recommended weekly intake because I know it's different for men versus women. I think women is, it's less, right? It's like no more than 7 drinks per week versus men, it's like 8 drinks per week.
Or it might be 3 or 4. I was under the impression it was like 5 and 7.
Okay. We might need to look that up.
Both doctors were wrong, LOL. The correct answer is 7 drinks per week for women, 14 drinks per week for men.
And I know that we learned about, like, for women specifically, alcohol intake being related to breast cancer. And so, like, to reduce risk of cancer and things like that, they actually recommend that you stay, like, below 3 to 4 drinks per week. Because higher intake than that is associated with a higher risk of cancer. But as a general rule of thumb, I might actually be thinking, now that I think about it, about the Mediterranean diet. Because I know the Mediterranean diet, you can have 2 glasses of wine with dinner each night, which is just crazy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, we can kind of get into that too. Maybe we'll talk about it now. But there's also various different types of alcohol, right? Like hard liquor, beer, wine. There's some preferences over the other. Not that we encourage people to drink, but if you are to drink, you know, maybe one is better than the other, sort of a thing. One thing I usually tell people is probably wine is better, and just because of the resveratrol and a lot of the antioxidant, especially more in the red wine. But when we talk about hard liquor, right? Funny enough, I absolutely hate this liquor. But but tequila is probably one of the common things that I talk about with my patients, especially when it comes to like gut and sugar or carb intake, just because a lot of the other liquors have more of the higher sugar content. So things like candida overgrowth or just a lot of like gut microbiome work that we've been doing, we try to go a little more into like, okay, I don't recommend people to drink tequila, but just FYI.
That is one of the reasons, because like, I mean, even before when I was younger and I would drink a lot more alcohol, my alcohol of choice was usually a vodka. But then I learned about like alcohol metabolism and how we actually break it down in the body and like why it's considered a toxin for our bodies. And that at that point, then I made the decision that I was going to start switching over to like a tequila, just because in addition to it just being lower sugar content, it actually metabolizes in our body more efficiently than, and this is like clean, you know, very well processed tequila versus like other types of alcohol, but the process in the liver breaks down a lot better so that you don't have a lot of the serious side effects or symptoms of hangover, even just because the process of breaking down tequila doesn't produce as much acetaldehyde as like other liquors, right? So
the reason why I'm looking at Dr. Britt in like not confused, but this look is just more of
because you get effed up.
You get effed up with tequila when you drink it, but aftermath, it's a lot less than if you were to drink vodka or gin or whatever have you. So
this is the trick. You can't do a lot. You can't do the high. You can't do a margarita and expect the same effects because a margarita has tequila, but it also is packed with a lot of the sugar. It has to be very clean tequila, and it also has to be not combined in like a lot of the mixed drinks. Mm. So although this may seem like less, I guess, healthier, just doing, you know, plain and simple like tequila, seltzer water, or just like tequila on the rocks with some lime, like that's, and I know,
sorry,
but this is also the thing that I was telling you before too. It's an acquired taste because I used to be a vodka girl. So going from vodka to tequila, I did not like it at first, but then I was just kept telling myself like, no, I need to make myself get used to this. And over time, I actually did get used to it. And so I always will like how we did before. I know that this, again, we're not recommending that you guys drink alcohol. This is actually a stop drinking alcohol or drink less of alcohol episode. But just so you guys know,
we're keeping it real.
Yeah, exactly. We're being real. 20% of our life, you know, we may indulge in some things and you're going to have those, you know, those situations where you're maybe going to consume alcohol. So you should be mindful of like what the alcohol choices are and how you should be doing properly. My healthier form of drinking alcohol is reposado tequila shots with oranges or limes and cinnamon. I think it's delicious. Dr. Lisa thinks it's disgusting.
I'm just dry heaving. I mean, I like this cinnamon with orange whenever we do tequila shots or something like that. But I'm dry heaving with tequila.
You don't and like the taste.
This is not to offend anybody who's, you know, loves tequila
drinkers.
Yes. Like it's just personal preference. I don't really.
You're wine. I feel like you're more of a wine girl now.
Yeah.
Right?
I honestly, when we first met, I literally told Dr. Britt, like, I don't take shots. Like, I've never really drank until like med school, funny enough. Mm-hmm. And now it's like I'll drink here and there, but usually, yeah, I'll drink wine. Maybe gin. I would say gin's probably my go-to whenever we do any sort of cocktails. But honestly, most times it's either socially or maybe a night that we're having like Italian or something that the wine pairs really well with. Sounds so snobby, but
your wine, you know, pairings.
Yeah, we're just like wine drinkers at our house to the point. I blame my husband.
Yes, John is definitely the wino in the fam.
Yes. I don't even like to drink sometimes, so.
But I feel like, you know, that's why I bring up the Mediterranean diet, because even the, you know, recommendation of like you can have 2 glasses of red wine with each meal, and you know, as far as research goes, that's we have the most compelling arguments for the Mediterranean diet. But we also have to keep in mind that the situation in which they have the wine is very different from the like standard American diet or just like lifestyle, because in the Mediterranean, they always cook their meals together. It's always a social event. They're making their own wines, right? So the filtration and the just like the processing is a lot different from how we're having it here. So even when and if I'm recommending a Mediterranean style diet to a patient, you know, there is that little tidbit in there that you can drink 2 glasses of red wine, but really you want to try to cut down on alcohol consumption as much as possible, just because the research is now so compelling about alcohol intake, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, most times, aside from the cultural end of things, right, or like societal end of things of why people drink, there is also more of like this dependency that people have when it comes to alcohol because of its effect of being inhibitory for us. So helping us really feel more relaxed or, you know, disinhibited and all of that, especially like end of the day or end of the week. That's usually when people are having like ragers and the weekends and all of that, right? And how alcohol impacts our central nervous system is that it basically increases our GABA, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. And it also activates your dopamine and opioid receptor. So you get this sense of like reward. It also triggers release of serotonin in your nervous system. So then you feel this happy, relaxed sort of a state. So acutely, sure, like it makes you feel good, but there's so many implications, exactly like what Dr. B was saying, of how negatively impactful it is when it comes to our body, especially when it comes to chronic use or overtime use and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think one thing that people, and we've talked about this in our previous episodes with like sleep, right? A lot of people use alcohol as like a nightcap. And then, you know, if they're consuming a fair amount of alcohol, it has impact on your sleep cycle because of it affects your nervous system. And then it's kind of this like repetitive pattern, right? It's a depressant. It's a depressant for the nervous system. So oftentimes people will turn to alcohol for not only to like as a coping mechanism for anxiety, but also as a coping mechanism for depression. But then they're maybe not realizing that they're getting themselves stuck into a little bit of a hole because alcohol itself is a depressant, right? So you're depressed, you're drinking alcohol to cope because maybe it like numbs you or mellows you out. And then it just kind of creates this, this cycle of, you know, just not feeling well, mentally and physically, right? Because there are so many physical symptoms that come with drinking alcohol, aka a hangover. So just so you guys know, when you are consuming alcohol, your liver is responsible for turning this alcohol, which is considered to be a toxin to the body, down to something that we can actually get out of our body, how we detox from alcohol, essentially. And during the process of breaking down alcohol, you produce a byproduct called acetaldehyde. And it's very toxic to the body and it's very damaging to the liver organ itself, but many other things that come into contact with the acetaldehyde. And so the presence of this toxic buildup is actually what's giving you the not only the feeling of kind of being drunk, but also causing the symptoms of hangover where you feel like you're tired, you've been hit by a train because you've literally just poisoned yourself for a couple hours that night before, right? The other thing too that I like to bring up about alcohol and why people feel crappy after drinking alcohol is that the process of breaking alcohol down utilizes a lot of important vitamins, minerals. You become vitamin deficient, specifically in the B vitamin realm. And so that's why if you look at any of the hangover cures or any of those things that, you know, say this will cure a hangover or prevent a hangover, a lot of them are packed with B vitamins because that's what you deplete when you drink alcohol. The other reason why you feel like crap too is just because you haven't slept very well and you're dehydrated, right? Because the process of drinking alcohol dehydrates you. And you probably noticed that if you've ever noticed like, okay, I'm starting to drink and I have to go pee, right? Everyone has to go pee very frequently and a lot too, because it's just flushing all of the liquid out and taking the minerals with it.
I feel like another common question or something that comes up, right, is like people who can't tolerate alcohol, or aka the Asian glow for our Asian folks. And I believe a lot of that process is because they lack the enzyme that converts the acetaldehyde to a different byproduct that you can excrete those toxins out of the body. So same thing, a lot of these, you know, Asian Glow supplements or patches or whatever, a lot of them have the B vitamins. A lot of them also have a lot of the liver supportive herbs like NAC, milk thistle, dandelion, DHM, dihydromyristine. I would say this is not a recommendation. Obviously, talk with your provider. Talk with your provider. Yeah, this disclaimer. Is not medical advice. But DHM is probably one of the common things that I recommend, not just to my patients, but even when friends and family ask who can't tolerate alcohol, I'll usually give it to them because that helps to process it. But it's not a good feeling. It feels like an allergic reaction because guess what? You can't tolerate or process this toxin that's just in your body.
Mm-hmm.
But not only in terms of the hangover, more in an acute end of things, chronic end of things, the detrimental things that can happen when there is excess alcohol consumption or even alcohol dependency is it interrupts with your brain, brain signaling, neurotransmitters, communication. So it disrupts people's mood and sleep. Heart. So a lot of implications in terms of heart disease, whether it's hypertension, cardiomyopathy, which is basically like enlargement of your heart. And even things like arrhythmia, where you're having irregular heartbeats. Probably liver is the number one thing that most people worry about because, again, it's that organ that's the major organ that is detoxifying and trying to process these alcohol molecules. So you can get fatty liver, you can get alcoholic hepatitis, you can get cirrhosis, you can get fibrosis, and You don't really want to get into that because at that point, you're probably going to have liver failure and need liver transplant. And that's a whole slew of things.
Yeah, a good chunk of people may have like experienced some sort of extent of liver damage from regular alcohol consumption. The other thing too, just like with that you mentioned, like the impact on the brain, there's a high chance of developing dementia and Alzheimer's with regular alcohol use. The one other thing that I was thinking of when you were mentioning all of those things is just the fact that like with regular alcohol consumption, there is a certain level of addiction that develops and, dependence, right? So just with long-term abuse, there is a certain level of like withdrawal symptoms that you can sometimes expect when you're going to start cutting back on alcohol. And some of those things can be very bothersome, dangerous, even life-threatening. And so that's one of those things, like if you are one of those people that consumes alcohol regularly, you may not even realize that the process of trying to cut back is just so much harder because there is a level of dependence that your body builds to the alcohol. So I think, you know, for this part of the episode might be a little bit of a buzzkill, but it's kind of a wake-up call for a lot of people that, you know, maybe to sit down and actually think about like, okay, am I actually consuming a dangerous amount of alcohol or setting myself up for failure in future years to become like dependent on alcohol and need it? Because that's not a great place to spiral down to.
Right. And clinically too, right? One of the things that we kind of, at least in our brain, that we start thinking about for anybody who drinks excessively and is trying to all of a sudden cold turkey or anything, there's a risk of a condition called delirium tremens that can happen. And I feel like when it comes to alcohol, most of us too, we kind of don't realize, but alcohol technically falls under the same category of like if you were doing a medication withdrawal, right? Or tapering, I should say. So it takes time and slow of a process so that you can minimize the risk and side effects of these other implications if you were to cold turkey. There's also, when it comes to the realm of dependency and abuse, when it comes to more of like mood and stress, right? In terms of evaluating what's going on in your life, what's happening, why are you depending on alcohol? And that's a whole nother, you know, episode we could probably do in terms of just mental wellness and all of that. But, you know, a lot of people use alcohol for that sense because they don't know how to manage their stress. They don't know how to manage their emotions. I don't know how to manage the things, the internal thoughts and feelings and they end up going towards things like alcohol to cope.
They may not even realize that they're using it to cope.
Exactly. Yeah. And just, again, this isn't a fear tactic, but there's so many implications, negative implications of excess or alcohol dependency that really damages your other parts of your health that you really want to keep in mind and really delve into. So other than that little buzzkill, also really negatively impacts your immune system. You can get sick more recurrently because it dampens down your immune system. You have risk of pancreatitis, cancer risk, like Dr. Britt already mentioned earlier, and some other kind of general things when it comes to like naturopathic end of things. Mm-hmm. Anything that's a toxin that's going to create inflammation. You know, a lot of the things, if you go on TikTok or Instagram, people talking about, oh, I went sober and these are the things that I notice or that I feel. And a lot of what they're, you know, allegedly saying is they see less inflammation or less fluid retention in their body just because your body's not in this consistent state of trying to fight off this toxin. Always going to be talking about gut. Damages your gut lining, disrupts your gut microbiome, so you can get into more of a state of dysbiosis or microbiome imbalance, slows down your metabolism, so your metabolism isn't working efficiently, so forth and so on. So
yeah, I was gonna say, when you're mentioning like how people online are talking about how they've noticed the change in their body and even like appearance after stopping alcohol, the one thing that I always see is that their face would be very puffy before, and then, you know, switch forward to like quitting alcohol, their face slims down a lot just because of all of that water retention and the impact on hormones and also inflammation levels. So that's something that, you know, you definitely want to bring it up to your provider if you feel like concerned about your alcohol intake. If you are being honest on your intake about how much alcohol you consume and your provider is, you know, not having that conversation or clarifying with you, that is something that you would want to bring up to try to advocate for your health and try to find some alternatives. Yes, there are medications that are available that can help you to quit drinking alcohol or your dependence on alcohol. I think we're going to talk more about like some alternatives that you can try, both supplement wise, but also even just like mocktails or non-alcoholic beverages that exist now that are, it's more popular now than it ever has been before. The non-alcoholic drink industry is just so much bigger than it ever has been before. From my looking at like what's available in stores, a lot of them seem to like be adaptogen based, herbal based. They're having things like rhodiola or ashwagandha, a lot of those like calming herbs to try to elicit this sense of like giving you a little bit of a buzz,
euphoria, right?
This feeling of like, yeah, uplifted, but giving you a little bit of a buzz without the alcohol content. One thing that I actually like to bring up to patients a lot of the time too is, you know, one step towards working towards eliminating alcohol completely is just trying to reduce your intake. A lot of times what I will do in a setting where it's like I want to drink, but I don't want to drink a lot, I will just mix. I will mix, you know, like if it's a can of seltzer or whatever it is, then I will just mix a little bit of the seltzer with, you know, you can water it down with water or like a soda water or something like that, just so that the alcohol content is not as potent. And that's one way to start off. There's so many different avenues that you could take. I think of like, for those beer drinkers out there, there's actually non-alcoholic beer now that tastes exactly the same. Like, for example, one example is Heineken Zero, just because I know a lot of people drink Heineken beer, and they want to be able to participate and drink and socialize, but they don't want to, you know, maybe they're on a sobriety journey and they don't want to drink beer, but it's one of those things that's kind of like a social socially accepted thing, you can do opt for a non-alcoholic beverage. That's something that you can also do too, just so you like calm yourself down of not feeling completely left out, and not feeling like you're really, you know, missing out on something, but you still want to be able to participate in social events.
I think one important thing too, and this again goes down a whole realm of working on yourself mentally and emotionally, but there's also this sense of peer pressure, right? Where if you do go out or you're at a party and everybody's drinking alcoholic beverages, and for someone who's in that sobriety journey, they might feel pressured or, oh, like I'm a buzzkill or anything like that. Don't give in to that pressure. You are investing in your health, and whatever someone might say in a passing, whether it's, you know, intentionally or passive aggressively, screw them.
Yeah.
It's your health. You do whatever you want. And, you know, you don't want to also be in a setting where you're avoiding social situations just because you're not going to be drinking. That's not the case. And like Dr. Britt said, there's so many alcoholic companies and non-alcoholic beverage companies that offer so many great products. I've tried them myself because I've actually tried to be on my own journey of trying to drink less. I want to go completely sober, but my husband is buying wine. But a lot of these drinks, I've always been, for some odd reason, really been a fan of just beverages in general. So like I would always try different kombuchas, even like prebiotic sodas and just a lot of what's in the market, because I'm a big fan of, I want to try all of these things, and if I like them and I see good benefits or formulations to them, I would recommend it to my patients. And I don't get like any affiliate marketing or whatever, but there's so many different ones. It's so popular and it's so big now in terms of even for these companies to be like, oh, you know what? A lot of our consumers are going into this sobriety journey. We don't want to lose their money. We don't want to lose our profit from them. So they make a lot of these non-alcoholic ones or 0% alcohol beverages. Couple of the ones that I actually really like that I've tried myself. There's one by Ghia, G-H-I-A. I'll put a picture. As well as Kin Euphorics.
Oh, I love Kin.
Bella Hadid. Yeah. I love Bella. and I love these drinks. A lot of them are, again, adaptogenic, mm-hmm. like Dr. Britt said. Some of them might be a little more bitter or strong of a flavor, but I always recommend people to just give it a try. And if you like them, have it in stock and even bring it with you when you go to different parties, different functions, or, you know, pregame, all that kind of sort of stuff. Depending on the formulation or what the blend is, it'll give you either that like uplifting or energy or calming, all that kind of sort of stuff. There's also a lot of like CBD based drinks as well now, depending on where you live. But CBD also is very great in terms of that calming, relaxed feeling without that THC psychoactive component. And then another thing that I used to do, and I actually learned it from one of my residency directors, was using supplements. Supplements that are like powder or, you know, have some flavor that you can just mix into, you know, soda water or just regular water or even just soda, whatever you want, to give it like a nice mocktail. And a lot of these supplements, there's one that I really like that I'll say the name of in a sec. A lot of these supplements have components of like L-theanine, GABA, magnesium, that are more of that calming, that relaxed feeling that you get, like you would from drinking alcohol, but also a little bit of like taurine. So it gives you a little bit of that energy component, that uplift feeling as well. The one I really like, I don't think anybody can get it just because it's a professional line and you probably know what it is too. It's the Relax Max by Zymogen, and they have a really nice cherry flavor. They have an unflavored one as well if you don't like cherry, but really good cherry flavor that actually mixes really well with liquid of your choice. And it has the same effect of that giving that calm, relaxed feeling as if you were to be drinking without the alcohol.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this with like our in season one with like the sleepy mocktail, like people using alternatives to alcohol for relaxing them if they want a nightcap. So you can make your own and make it taste really, really good. You can just do a kind of like trial of different ones if you want to try. I've recommended magnesium glycinate for people. I've recommended just glycine in general. Inositol powder can even be helpful. Some of those nutrients have been shown to like give an overall kind of just like chill vibe. L-theanine is another one you can get in powder form. And just as a reminder, L-theanine helps you promote those, you know, those alpha waves that are kind of like you're in a meditative state. And
tranquility.
So exactly. It's kind of zen, right? So giving you that sense of like relaxation, if that's what you're looking for. Because I realize that a lot of people will drink for many different reasons. And so I think it's one of those things where you have to figure out what works well for you. And it may not be what other people are doing. So you just have to kind of trial it out and see what works best for you with what you're trying to achieve. I think that one thing with alcohol consumption, like Dr. Lisa was saying too, there is that peer pressure component. And a lot of times if, you know, everyone's drinking and, you know, or even just like having you drink or like giving you more drinks or whatever it is, there is a certain level of like, you do need to understand that other people are not in charge of your health and your body. And so there can be a little bit of a like boundary that you have to put up with people and just say, no, I'm not going to do it. Or, you know, this is better for my health right now. Because it is one of those things that we see so commonly in culture that's like, it's like a participation kind of thing, right? Like everyone's doing it. And so the peer pressure feeling can come about very easily. And also at the same time too, in social situations, a lot of people could be using the alcohol as even just a coping mechanism for social anxiety. And so the idea of like not having that crutch and then also people being like, why aren't you drinking? Could be a thing. But I think that's something that if it's going to be a problem for you and it, you know, it's going to give you some level anxiety, then that's your signal to work with your provider on your social anxiety, work with your provider on just anxiety in general, and talk to your friends. Cause I feel like a good friend will be understanding of it and be respectful of it. If you're around people that are your friends or your family or whatever it is that are not respecting your choices with alcohol consumption, then that is a sign that you need to have a very serious conversation with them about respecting your choices and not making you feel a certain type of way with your health decisions, or even just, you know, bringing it up to them in a situation where it's like you can give examples of like why you've made these choices. Because sometimes people, I think, just don't understand why like someone's having a journey or not. I'm just thinking from my point of view and what a lot of people will probably be, it's going to be in situations with their close friends or their family members that are going to be like, okay, why all of a sudden are you making this decision? And I think sometimes it is helpful for them to just even know, just to be informed, because I think without knowing why somebody is the way making the choices, it can be very easy for you to be like, well, every point up until now you've been drinking with me, and like, why all of a sudden are you not drinking now? I think it's just helpful to share. And not everyone will be comfortable with making that decision. But I also think of like people or patients that have like family history of alcoholism, where even in their family, it's been like just normalized to drink and to drink a lot and even encouraged. And that can be something that is like very difficult for a lot of people. And so just know that this is something you can definitely bring up with your provider. We're just kind of opening the conversation. Hopefully, you know, you can take some of the little tips and tricks from this episode and use that, or just even see it as a signal of like, maybe I need to sit down and like ponder my alcohol consumption.
And if you're someone who has a friend who's going on their sobriety journey, make sure you check in with them, see how they can be supported by you. And it can be a difficult journey for some people. So make sure that you can be of a support one way or another. Ask them how you can be there for them.
So as a little like side plug, I've been watching Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah.
So for my reality TV girlies out there, in Vanderpump Rules, they actually go through it because a lot of them are alcohol makes them just very dramatic and people make bad decisions on alcohol. We all know that.
Are they all like bartenders too?
They are. So they're in the industry where it's heavily like encouraged and, you know, promoted and things like that. But they actually do this thing so that a lot of them go on a sobriety journey because they're like, okay, I make bad decisions when I drink. And so I want to stop drinking cold turkey and stuff. But they actually did something that was like very interesting that I've never seen. It's called a water tasting. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's like supposedly there's like different levels of water and like the taste is different.
Like different brands and
Where it's like, you know how there's like cheaper bottles of wine, but then there's expensive bottles of wine. There's actually the same thing in water, which is just so crazy. But that's just like a fun little like plug thing.
You can't taste the difference in water?
No, like so I haven't done a water tasting myself, but like this essentially in the episode, they were like talking about how there's like different flavors and tastes in different waters from like different areas, almost like the wine from France is different from the wine in Spain. Like there's supposedly a difference between that. I've never tasted wine from France or water from France or Spain, but like maybe there is a difference. I've never done a wine water tasting myself.
Okay,
but
maybe one sleepover night we'll do this.
Yeah, a little sobriety fun activity for people. Yeah.
Or, you know, something that I see a lot on like TikTok or Instagram is like, you know, when especially girls have like a girls' night, they'll do like a little like making drinks for one another, right?
Oh, that's
but
cute.
Instead of having like alcoholic cocktails, you can do mocktails, but you can put, you know, different herbs, different ingredients, edible glitter, you know, whatever, and then have a theme night. You know, I think one common thing that people do is like theme of like ex-boyfriends or like theme of like movies or something like that. So, you know, really cool ways to support one another in terms of the sobriety journey, or at least reducing the, you know, consumption of alcohol. And it's a journey, but it can be a fun one. Well, that was our episode today on reducing alcohol consumption and or going into sobriety. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe, like whether you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or watching us with the video, with our faces, with the tidbits on YouTube. And make sure you give us a follow on our social media page, on our Instagram and TikTok. Make sure you share these episodes with your friends and family if you feel like they can be of help to them.
All right, guys. Be real.
And stay well.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.